this year it's probably 2,555 or 2,556 years of the Buddha, according to the Buddha, Buddhist calendar. But the year that we calculated was actually starting from the year that the Buddha left, so the Buddha entered Parinirvana. So if we know that the Buddha was born and then he attained enlightenment at the age of 35 and entered Parinirvana at the age of 80, so you have 2,550 something years plus 80. So when we say the year that the Buddha was born is actually more than 2,600 years ago. Right? So the Buddha was born, there was more than 2,600 years ago, and after it attained enlightenment, he tried to share the teachings with all sentient beings and walked around the two banks of Ganges River and for 45 years. From 35 years old to 80 years old, he traveled around two banks of Ganges River, tried to share the teachings with others. So he gave a lot of warmth and brightness to everyone, share his wisdoms with everyone, hope that all sentient beings will be able to understand what are the causes of suffering and be able to attend liberation as well and free themselves from suffering. So when he comes to the age of 80, he's physically getting old, because this physical body is still a phenomena of the world. It's subject to impermanence, it has to deteriorate. So towards the last moment of the Buddha, physical body is deteriorating, and so that was the last moment when he was traveling from Vaishali to Kushinagara. He's feeling it's not well, and he wants to take a rest. And at that time, there were also a practitioner of another religion called Subhadra, heard that the Buddha is soon leaving the world. He came along and wanted to see the Buddha. And the Buddha was very compassionate, although he was physically weak, not feeling well. He still teach Subhadra, and Subhadra became the last disciple of the Buddha. So now the Buddha is tell the followers that he's going to soon enter Parinirvana. Now, how many of you are not sure about the word Parinirvana? Alright, so you heard about the word Nirvana? Yes. So what's the difference between Nirvana and Parinirvana? So you all heard of the word Nirvana. What do you understand by Nirvana?
The end of suffering.
Alright, so it is a state where someone has freed themselves from all afflictions and realized the truth, and so the mind is at a state of peace and ease, not constrained by the afflictions anymore. If you look at ourselves, we all like to be at peace and at ease, but what has made us so frustrated all the time? Our greed, our hatred, our jealousy, our arrogance, our selfishness. If you sit down quietly and think, what are the elements that disturb you every day? No other than these elements. So someone is free from, just imagine if you are free from worry, you are free from grief, you are free from hatred, you are free from jealousy, you are free from arrogance, you are free from selfishness, you are free from the self-centeredness, you are just so embracing. Do you find that you are actually more at ease? See, it is this, all this that has constrained us. Our greed, our hatred, our arrogance, our selfishness, our self-centeredness tends to set a boundary on us that we are actually constraining ourselves and get very frustrated over things because of all these elements in ourselves. If we can free ourselves from this, we are actually very peaceful. So the Buddha realized that these are the causes of suffering, and he had eliminated all these afflictions and realized that this self-centeredness is actually not necessary. So when he realized this truth And he also knows that all this is possible for all sentient beings to realize this truth as well. And that's why he tried to share the teachings with others. So Nirvana is a state where someone who has freed himself from self-centeredness realizes the truth of the world, that everything arises to causes and conditions, everything is impermanent, everything does not have a fixed nature. And so because they understand the truth, they do not attach to things unnecessarily like us. What we are doing every day is that we are trying to go against the natural law. The natural law is everything is impermanent, everything is like in a flow of water. We try to push the water uphill. And that's why we bring ourselves a lot of frustration. But someone who understands the truth, knowing that this is the natural flow, it's not created by the Buddha, but it is how it flows, then they will understand that, okay, things will change. They take it with a peaceful mind. And they also understand that when it changes to a state where it may not be favorable, but it's not going to be permanent, it is going to continue changing. What we need to do is to look at it with a peaceful mind, and then try to see what we can do so that we put in the condition so that even it flows to the next state, it become better. So you just understand that this is just very natural, and you can also put in some of your effort to try to create a better future. So what is it you're frustrated about? Your mind is always peaceful and calm. So someone who realizes the truth and not disturbed by the environment, they actually can make use of the environment to create what they want. But we are actually being affected by the environment. We are not the boss of ourselves. The environment, our desire, is our boss. We are the slave of our desire. We become the slave of the environment. But someone who realizes the truth will actually be able to make use of all these conditions in a very flexible way without being disturbed. So someone who has realized the truth and freed themselves from affliction, freed themselves from self-centeredness, their mind is always at peace and at ease. And because they free themselves from self-centeredness, then they are not being constrained by time and space. See, why we are being constrained by time and space is because we say, I'm here at certain day and certain time. There's an I who is here, alright? But if someone realizes that this I is actually empty in nature, it is causes and conditions, that every moment we are different. So which I are we clinging on to? So when they realize this truth, they are not being constrained by which particular I at which particular moment, because everything is in the moment of changing. And so when someone has attended state of Nirvana, they are not being constrained by time and space. They are free from affliction. They understand things very thoroughly. There's no fear. See, why do we have fear? It's because we are worried that something's going to happen. Yes, you are afraid that something is going to happen next second, and especially you are worried that this something that's going to happen next second is going to affect you. If the leaf is falling down every day, are you worried about it? We are not. But if you are in the share market, you have a lot of investment at the share market, and you will be very worried. But if you don't care about the share at all, you didn't buy any share, you don't care, it goes up and down. Is that right? So, it is when something is related to us, we start to feel scared. Because we are afraid that it might affect us. See, again, it's this I that is the problem. Alright, so all these teachings, maybe you'll probably talk in more details in other talks. But today we talk about, just explain this word, but we need to go on to that one. Alright, so Nirvana is a state where someone has realized the truth, freed themselves from affliction, freed themselves from self-centeredness, not constrained by time and space, they are at peace and at ease. So it's a state of mind which is at peace and at ease. It is not another place, that another world that people go, that this is the world that is a Nirvana world. Someone can continue to stay in this world, attend Nirvana. The Buddha, when he attained enlightenment at the age of 35, in fact, he has already attained Nirvana. We use the word enlightenment to highlight the Buddha's wisdom. But if you want to describe his state of mind, which is the peace and at ease, we use the word Nirvana. Alright? So at the age of 35, the Buddha actually has attended Nirvana. So he continued to spread the teachings around until he comes to age 35, he enters Parinirvana. Parinirvana is that his mind is still at peace and at ease, but physically, he's going to leave this physical body behind as well. So this attain Nirvana can be just a state of mind. You can still have physical body walking around, helping people, but your mind is always at peace and at ease. But when it comes to age 80, because this physical body is deteriorating, you finally have to let go this physical body, and which means, or in our ordinary term, we say he passed away, that we won't be able to see him anymore. Alright? So this is enter Parinirvana. So he entered Parinirvana at the age of 80. Alright? So now, come to the Buddha's last days, the Buddha tells the disciples that I'm going to enter Parinirvana in 3 months' time. So everyone is very anxious about it and very nervous about it, for all kinds of mixed feelings about it. And so, when it comes to the last moment, the Buddha was walking from Vajrasali to Kushinagara, and then he comes to this place at Kushinagara with the two sala trees. The two sala tree was placed in the sutra, it's a big tree, the two trees joined together as a shade for the Buddha to lie down. So the Buddha lied between the trees, and there were a lot of disciples who were around, they have a lot of worries in themselves. So it's a mixed worries. Emotionally, they're going to miss the Buddha, so they have, just like someone you love is going to pass away. So the disciple who have attained enlightenment, of course, will be able to understand that everything is impermanent and they need to be diligent. But for disciples who have not attained enlightenment, they will feel very sad. On one hand, they're going to lose a good teacher, a wise teacher, the great teacher that they have. On the other hand, they will start to get very worried. How should we continue to practice when this Buddha is not around? So at that last moment, there were Ananda, on behalf of everyone, asked the Buddha a few questions. First is that after the Buddha's Parinirvana, who should we rely on as our teacher? Very important question. We're now all relying on Buddha. Now you're going to pass away. Now you're going to enter Parinirvana. Who are we going to rely on? Anyone want to guess what was the answer?
Rely on yourself.
Rely on yourself? Alright. So rely on yourself, but if you do not have the perfect wisdom as yet, you rely on yourself. If you rely on our own judgment, then may not be, sometimes may not be very right. So the Buddha say, after my Parinirvana, rely on the rules and regulations, the precepts I've set as your teacher. The Buddha said, I've expounded a lot of teaching, I've set the rules, so if you follow the rules, then it helps you to become more contented, and it helps you to path away towards liberation. Alright, so that is the first question. And then the second question is that, where should we abide our mind on? Our mind is always wandering around. How should we practice? Where should we place our mind? Not to place that anyway. Okay. Are we able to not to place it anyway, if you can? Alright, so the Buddha say that try to place your mind on the four foundation of mindfulness. I think that's probably other topics that we have to go on, but I'm just going to touch on this. Alright? So the four foundation of mindfulness is that we need to always be mindful of our body, alright? This physical body, what is the truth of this physical body? Observe our body, that this body is impure, that we love so much. Every day you put on perfume, you shower a few times. Why do you need to shower so many times? Because you get dirty. Why do you need to put perfume on? Because it's now. It basically shows us that our body is impermanent. But we try to cheat ourselves. We try to put the perfume on that I smell nice. See, when you put the perfume on, did you realize that you are trying to not to observe the impermanence of your body, but trying to use something else to cover it? And that's what happened to us most of the time. The Buddha says the truth is all around us in all phenomena. If you try to observe the truth, you realize the truth. But for us, it's that this thing will become broken. I'll try to cover it with something. So that we don't see the changes. So the Buddha said, first, so the four foundation of mindfulness is be mindful of your body. Alright? Observe the truth of your body. It is impure, it is impermanent, so try to make full use of it when it is applicable to help us to develop ourselves. We need to take care of our body, but do not overspend. Spend too much time just in taking care of this body until you forget about the teaching, forget about your practice. We want to take care of this body so that we have enough nutrition, so that we have enough energy to help ourselves to practice, and also so that we can help ourselves as well as others. If we take care of our body so well, every day we try to take supplements, nutrition, food, and just to make sure that we are very healthy and fit, and do not want to do anything, then what's this body for? Some people say, I need to go to fitness, I need to go to gym, and I need to go back and cook something for myself so that I'm strong and fit. When you ask them to help to do something, so sorry, I need to go back and eat, cook something special for myself. So at the end, you have this very strong body, very fit body. What is it for? So we have to understand that this body is just like a tool for us to practice. It is, no matter how you take care of it, you could be strong and fit, but we can't escape ourselves from becoming old and die one day, no matter how fit you want it to be. So we have to understand that while we try to take care of our body, we also want to make sure that all this energy that we have, we try to contribute it or try to make full use of it to develop our wisdom. Right, so that is be mindful of our body. Second, be mindful of the sensation. What is the truth of sensation? Sensation. We all like to have nice sensations. Sit on comfortable chair. Lie on comfortable bed. Sit in comfortable room with air conditioning. See, we all like comfortable feeling. What is the truth of this feeling? It's something that we need to be mindful of. Alright? So I'm not going to talk in too detail about this, but it could be something that other speaker may touch on. Alright? So there's mindfulness on body, mindfulness on sensation, and then thirdly, mindfulness of our mind. What is happening in our mind? Like a monkey mind. It's that our mind fluctuates all the time. It's impermanent. Our thoughts rise and fall, rise and fall. The mind is rising and falling. And then fourth, mindfulness on all phenomena. Observe the truth of all phenomena. That how does all phenomena arise? They arise due to causes and conditions. So these are the four foundations of mindfulness that the Buddha tells us to make sure that we try to bear in mind this, and whatever we are observing, whatever we encounter, try to relate to this teaching. And then you find that your mind is filled with the Dharma, and it will also slowly guide you to enlightenment. Alright, so that is the second question that Ananda asked. The first is, who should be our teacher? The second is, how should we practice? How should we, where should we abide, make sure our mind is safe? And then third is, what happens if all this sutra that the Buddha taught, that when we try to pass it on from generation to generation, if there are people who do not believe in it, how should we how should we convince them and make and help them to understand that this is actually a teaching from the Buddha? So the Buddha's answer to this is, for all sutras that say by the Buddha, that is in accordance with the Buddha's teaching, it starts with thus I have heard. So you find that all sutras started with thus I have heard. So because Ananda was attendant to the Buddha, and during the compilation meeting, he's the one who recited the sutra. So it's added with this, that means it was a teaching that someone has heard directly from the Buddha. So it's the first sentence in all sutras. And then the fourth question is that if we met with someone who is very, very nasty in the Sangha order, someone who always disturbs the Sangha order, someone who is very nasty, what should we do with him? Now, because during Buddha's time, there was this chariot, the horseman of the Buddha, who was the playmate of the Buddha, or playmate of the Prince Siddhartha. So when the Buddha, the Prince Siddhartha attained enlightenment, this horseman later became a monk as well. But then because he used to be the Prince Siddhartha's playmate, so he always wanted to show off that I played with the prince when he was young. So he always wanted to show off himself that I have special relationship with the prince. I know his stories when he was young. See, sometimes there are people as such. And so he sometimes do not want to follow the rules and always want to show that he has special relationship with the prince, with the Buddha, because he knows the Buddha stories when he was a prince. And so the Buddha said, for people as such, we'll just try to, if he's very disturbing, what we can do is just everyone in the Sangha order try not to talk to him. So basically in Buddhism, in the Sangha order, there's no such thing as corporal punishment or things like that. So the worst is that, okay, everyone agree that he's not doing something right, we're all not going to talk to him. So he's isolated. Alright, so that is how the Buddha tried to solve the problem. Now, those are the four questions that Ananda asked. And then later, the Buddha also knows that all the audience, all the disciples were actually very have a lot of worries in themselves. So he also expounded the teaching, the sutra of the Buddha's last teaching. Alright, now, so this sutra try to give comfort to the disciples that after the Buddha passed away, you don't need to worry. And also this sutra encompasses a lot of teachings, that the essence of the teaching on how to practice. So it's the final teaching of the Buddha. And this sutra is not found in the Pali text. It's not found in the Sanskrit text as well. It is only in the Chinese version of the Tripitaka. The reason is being that the Sanskrit and Pali text is now missing, and this sutra was translated around the 1st century BC by Kumarajiva, a very famous translator. And so it was translated into Chinese, so the Chinese version was preserved, but then the original text is missing. So there are two or three versions of English translation this day, but the English translation are not very very good as yet. Alright, so there's Venerable Kantipalo, who was actually an English monk who lived in West Missouri. He actually get hold of this few version of the English translation and try to work out a better translation, but the problem is he can't read the Chinese. So after he sort of get the few translation and try to rewrite in the English where it is easier for the English audience, he's not sure whether the meaning just is in accordance to the Chinese version. So he gets another variable to prove it for him. So there's this version that he has translated, and so he was originally from the Theravada tradition, and he feel that this teaching in the sutra of the Buddha's last teaching is in accordance to a lot of the Pali text, the the essence of it is in pieces here and there in the Pali text. But in Pali text, there's no one sutra as the sutra of the Buddha's last teaching. But this, the essence of this teaching is very good, and so he hoped that this can be shared with others. Alright, so what we are going to do today is that I'm going to go through the text with all of you in brief, because we only have about an hour, so we just try to go through the teaching in brief. So the Buddha, the story, this sutra starts with the introduction on that the Buddha is about to enter Parinirvana, and Subhadra came along and asked for teaching, so he became the last disciple of the Buddha, and everyone was very quiet. Now bear in mind, during Buddha's time, at this time when the Buddha was about to enter Parinirvana, so you can imagine there's Kusala tree, the Buddha's lying there, there's a lot of monks around. So the contents of the sutra, the audience of the sutra is basically more catered towards the monks. So that's why you find that the Buddha, whenever he says, he says, oh monk, oh bhikkhu. So it's basically to cater to the monks. But then some of the teachings are still very useful to the lay people. So only the first few parts where it talks about the precepts, then you find that it could be just for the monks. So this sutra has the first section, which is introduction, and then the core section, which talks more on the precepts, develop good discipline, and that is a prerequisite. And then the second part talks about further practice on how we should develop our mind of renunciation and developing of wisdom. Because you have to understand that we need to uphold good discipline, uphold good precepts, have a mind which is more peaceful before we can talk about cultivation of concentration and wisdom. Alright? And then the last part, the Buddha, it shows the compassion of the Buddha. The Buddha tried to encourage the monks, and then he also tried to ask if anyone has questions. He asked three times, and just make sure that no one has doubt. And then he also says that as long as everyone follows the teachings, it is just like I'm still around. So the Buddha says, as long as everyone, that he's going to enter Parinirvana, it is important for everyone to be diligent in your practice. Then if you are diligent in your practice, you follow the Buddha's teaching, then the Buddha is always present in the world. So the Dharma body, or the teachings of the Buddha, will continue to stay in the world. But if no one wants to practice the teaching, then you find that very quickly the teaching will disappear, and the Dharma body of the Buddha will also disappear. Now what does it mean by Dharma body? Some of you may have come across this word before, or Dharma Kaya. Kaya means body. It basically means the essence of the Buddha. What is the essence of the Buddha? It's basically the truth. The truth itself. So the truth itself is not constrained by time and space. It is the truth. So someone who realizes the truth will be able to see the Buddha. Does it make sense to you? Because the Buddha himself represents the truth. The Buddha himself is not constrained by time and space. If someone who can realize the truth, you'll be able to understand, oh, that is Buddha. That is what Buddha realized. You become the same level of understanding. Does it make sense? Alright? So, but if no one wants to practice the Buddha's teaching, then even if the Buddha is sitting there, it is of no use. So that's why the Buddha says, it is important for everyone to practice diligently, then the Buddha will be just like the Buddha is always around. If the Buddha is sitting in the world, and everyone says, oh, the Buddha is there, when we have a question, we're going to ask him, and now let's continue to enjoy. Then it is, the Buddha said, this doesn't help at all. Because the Buddha is not a god, he can't just transform someone and make anyone enlightened. He's like a teacher who teach us so that we practice and then we realize the truth ourselves. So if the Buddha is sitting there and everyone just worship him and do not take the teaching seriously and still commit all mistakes that you're not supposed to commit, and then go to the Buddha, please make sure that I'm happy, and turn around, you're not following the teaching, even the Buddha is there, it's no use. And that's why the Buddha said, it is important that you follow the teachings. If you follow the teachings, then you will understand that the Buddha is always around. If you do follow the teachings, the Buddha is not with you. So, alright, so that is how the Buddha, at the conclusion part, the Buddha tried to highlight all this and try to comfort everyone that he has tried his best to guide all sentient beings that he can guide, that has affinity with him, that can be guided. And he also left behind the teaching for the sentient being in the future to follow. So there's nothing to worry. Okay, so that's the last part of the sutra. Right, let's start with the first, the core section. So first is the introduction, as we say, how that's the scene, that the Buddha is lying there and try to speak to the disciple. And first thing he says that after my parinibbana, everyone should respect the precepts. Alright? So just like so it is just like your teacher. So you have to understand that this precept is just like our that is something that can save our life. See, we are all transmigrating in the cycle of our life and death. We are all drowning in the ocean of suffering. We all hope that we can float up, and we hope that we can free from this cycle of life and death. So what is the thing that can help us to free from this cycle of life and death? It has to start with, of course, finally it's a wisdom. But before we can develop our wisdom, we have to make sure that we don't commit wrong deeds and trap ourselves in the evil realm. At least we need to maintain our human existence so that we can continue to practice. So, in order for us to maintain our human existence, we need to uphold the precepts. Alright? So, that is for lay people, at least the 5 precepts. And for the monks and nuns, they are the precepts for the monks and nuns. So, he says that whether I'm living in this world or I'm not living in this world, it's after my parinibbana, it is still the same, that you need to uphold the pure precepts in order to lead yourself towards liberation. So for monks and nuns, they are basic rules that they need to follow, and also their right livelihood they need to uphold. And for the lay, for the monks and nuns, they have their right livelihood. For the lay people, you have your right livelihood that you need to follow. What does it mean by livelihood? The right occupation, the work that you're doing. So for monks and nuns, their work they're not supposed to engage in, for example, running business, right? That is something that a monk should not engage in. To accumulate a lot of properties, that is not something a monk should, a monk or nun should be doing. To be a fortune teller, it's not something that a monk or nun should do. Right, so that is not something not right, or so all these are, or to get yourself too involved into politics, or pardon, drug dealer. Of course, there are monks become drug dealers. I think there was a news. Someone was planting tobacco in the backyard, a monk. Yeah, so that's very bad. Alright, and also a monk should not try to only praise or try to make friends with the powerful people, rich people, and then look down on others. That is not something a monk or nun should do as well. Alright, so the Buddha say these are things that a monk and nun should avoid. Because if you try to do this, we are actually going the wrong way. It's not something a monk and nun should do. As for the lay people, then you should engage in the right occupation. The right occupation will be occupation that doesn't harm others. So occupation that doesn't involve killing, doesn't involve stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, alcohol. So basically it's following the five precepts. So any occupation that involves killing, you should try to avoid. Because you want to have a happy and peaceful life. If you're involved in killing an occupation that kills every day you come back, you feel guilty. How are you going to be peaceful? Stealing. Alright? Stealing, that's something that we need to avoid. Sexual misconduct, so someone runs prostitution or things like that. And lying. And alcohol. So alcohol includes any intoxicants such as drug trafficking and so on. So basically, a lay people should try to avoid occupation that is against the five precepts. And so for the monks and nuns, so these are occupations that we should try to avoid, but to maintain purity of our body and mind, and try to be mindful of the teaching, and try not to cover our mistake. We should try to have a righteous mind all the time to seek for liberation and peacefulness. And also do not try to play tricks or try to play magic to confuse the lay people. Some people pretend that they have supernatural power, or they can read your mind or things like that, and they start to do a lot of all these things that are reading people's mind and telling your fortune and things like that. These are things that a monk should try to avoid. And so if we can uphold the precepts, then you find that you will be able to slowly develop your virtues. But if you do not uphold the precepts, you find that all good virtues will not develop. So upholding precepts is the basic, okay? Because that at least set your foundation that you're doing the right thing. You don't have a remorse and guilt in yourself. That is very important. And then the next thing that the Buddha said is, then after we are able to abide to the precepts, doing the right thing in our life, then we want to look into our mind. Okay? First thing in looking into our mind is to look at our sense organ. Make sure that when our sense organ contact with the external environment, look at it carefully. Our sense organ are just like three orders, or these gates that open to the external environment. So if you see things is nice, things are nice, your mind just go out through all these gates. Then there's no boss in here. All desire comes in to become your boss. You see? So the Buddha said, be mindful of your sense organs when they contact with the external environment. Observe and understand where does your desire come from. Is it necessary for your mind to go out and chase after that external object? Otherwise, you'll be very, very busy, because you've got six doors open and your mind wants to run here, run there, very tight. So if we do not we are not mindful of our sense organs and just allow our mind to just go anywhere, we'll make ourselves very tired, and we'll also lead ourselves to a lot of suffering. Because the more you want, the more stressful you will be, the more burden you're going to bring yourself. So the example you say that it's just like a wild horse that is not being tamed. And the danger is that one day it may fall down. You run so fast that you didn't realize it's in a cliff, and then you may fall down and you got yourself into danger. So it is also like robbers. That now, if we are being robbed or a thief that got into our house, what we lost is only what we have for this life. You can still try to put in effort and try to gain back what you have lost. If the thief come into your house and take away all of your jewelry, your money, if you continue to work hard for another 5 years, you probably get back what you want, right? But if you allow all these thieves of desire to come into you and develop these strong desires in yourself and lost all your virtues, this desire, this greed, hatred that you have to develop yourself, not only hurt yourself for this life, but it's also going to harm yourself for the future life to come. So the robbers, the physical robber that take our things, will only hurt us this life, But the robbers of desire that take away our virtues will actually, the impact of it will actually go on to the future lives as well. Okay, so that's something that we need to remember. So after we are able to understand this sense organ, next is to look at our mind. Make sure that we understand how our mind rise and fall, that our mind chase after external desire, so we should try to put a stop to it and so that it doesn't go too wild. So if we can try to have a good control of our mind, then you find that slowly your mind power will develop and you can slowly become stronger in yourself, that you are not being carried away by desire, external things, external environment so easily. Slowly we can become the boss of ourselves. Alright, so you can see that from precepts, and then from sense organs, and then the mind. Alright, and so all these are still about discipline, because it's still not talking about concentration of mind as yet. And then the next thing, the next part is to be moderate in our food. So now this is talking about discipline, so it's talking about desire, our mind, and now relate it to our daily practices, daily life. That when we are eating, when we encounter food, right? Remember, food are just like medicine. So when you eat, nice, yummy. When you keep on eating, after three mouthfuls, try to stop for a while. The Buddha say, food is like medicine. Don't overdose. When you overdose your food, what will happen? You put on weight. Or you find that you're going to have stomach ache at the end because you eat too much. See, a lot of disease, a lot of problems of what kind of problems come from food? Stomach ache, high cholesterol, what else? Diabetes. Yes. So a lot of all these a lot of illness actually arise due to lack of control on food. So the Buddha said, remember, food are just like medicine, and do not be too fussy about food, that sometimes when it's not nice, you just eat a little, don't want to eat anymore. When it's very yummy, you eat a lot, that's not right. That is our greedy, the taste, you see, the tongue wants to have nice taste. But we have to remember, food are just like medicine to give us nutrition, so that we have energy to do work. It's a kind of medicine. It's to cure our hunger. That's all. So be moderate about our food. And so in that way, we learn to reflect our mind and do not allow ourselves to become too greedy. But it doesn't mean that we should not eat altogether. The Buddha tell us to practice the middle path. Remember, the Buddha himself, after he left, when he was a prince, after he left the palace, he did practice asceticism for about 6 years, eating very little per day, until he's physically very weak, and he realized that doesn't help. You can probably train your endurance towards the pain of the body, but it doesn't help you to develop a clearer mind. When we want to practice and to finally attain enlightenment, what we want is to allow our mind to become clearer and clearer. And how can we develop a clearer mind? It's not just by eating very little. You will just feel very dizzy at the end, you can't think. So the Buddha knows that going to the extreme of not eating is not right. Going to the other extreme of eating too much enjoyment and luxury, it's not helpful as well, because every day is what do I want to do to enjoy myself? You are not going to think about the phenomena of the world, the problem, and so on. So it's not going to the other extreme. It's not right as well. So that's why he said we want to live a normal life with a rational mind. So whatever food that comes to you, when it's nice, yes, you know it's nice, but just be contented. Do not just because it is so nice that you want to eat double your the usual quantity that you take. So just know that it is nice, very thankful. So it is not necessary for you to reject nice food as well. Some people say, we need to walk on the middle path. This food is too nice. Please don't give it to me. That is not right as well. You see? So if people come with goodwill, they offer something to you, we have to appreciate the kindness of others and allow people to make their offering. We should be thankful and appreciate the food, and we try to eat with a thankful mind. But the important thing is that, yes, this is nice. He or she has put in a lot of effort in making this food. I should try to transform this energy that I gain from this food to try to do something good for others. And then, when it comes to the next day, they say, is she coming again to give me the food? Then that means your greediness is arising. So after you eat and you appreciate the food, tomorrow don't miss that food and think about, is she coming again to give me that food again or not? So that if you think about that, then that means you start to get a bit attached to it. See? So these are all opportunities for practice. Practicing Buddhism is not just sitting down meditating. After listening to the teachings, we need to relate all this in our daily life. And that's how you can slowly understand the rising and falling of thoughts in your mind, the afflictions that's rising and falling, and how we can counteract our greed, our hatred, when they pop out. And if you're able to become so careful and mindful on this, then you find that your ability to control them, your ability to subdue them will be much easier. And even towards a later state, you may find that you don't even need to put in any effort to subdue it. You just know that it's not necessary. Okay. So that is about food. And then the next thing, the Buddha goes on to something that all of you find very difficult, to be moderate in your sleep. Don't indulge in sleeping. We have to understand that we need to have enough sleep to rest and so that we can regain our energy. But if we sleep too much, the doctor will say this is not right. Right? So, and the Buddha said we have to understand that in fact we don't have much time. See how old we are now. We're not young anymore. And how long can we continue to live? And how much Dharma have we learned? How much wisdom have we developed? How much afflictions do we still have in our mind? Do you have enough wisdom to counteract your afflictions at this moment? We still have a lot of tasks that we have not accomplished. You may say, I'm going to finish my university very soon. But what about your degree in attaining enlightenment? A long way to go. And think about, maybe if you are only 20 years old and if you can live until 80 years old, you still have 60 years to practice. Do you think you can eliminate all your afflictions within 60 years? And then within that 60 years, you're probably not using all the 60 years fully. See, how many percent of the time we spend in talking to our friends? How much of the time that we spend on eating? How much of the time we spend on chatting around? How much of the time we spend in worrying about things? How much of the time we spend in staring sad? How much of the time that we spend in our bad mood? Not in the right mood, don't want to do anything. How much time do we spend on sleeping? So if you calculate, at the end, how many years do you left? Do you have left? 30 years? Probably half of the time has gone to something else. And some people need even less. Is that right? So, 30 years. Do we have a lot of time left? Not much time. And if we indulge in sleeping, then we're going to waste more time. So the Buddha says, we have to understand that we don't have much time, so we need to be diligent. Just remember and understand that in fact, afflictions is just like the poisonous snake in ourselves. This either way our virtues all the time. We need to tame this poisonous snake. And in the this Sutra of the Buddha's last teaching, the Buddha also said, it is just like we are sleeping with a poisonous snake. Can you sleep soundly if you know that there's a poisonous snake sleeping beside you? You want to chase away the poisonous snake first before you can sleep soundly. So we need to chase away our afflictions first before we can sleep soundly. So that's why we need to try not to indulge too much in sleeping. And understand that we still have a lot of tasks that need to accomplish. We still have a lot of weakness, and we need to improve ourselves. Alright? And then the next one is that the Buddha said we need to reflect ourselves in our daily life, our anger and hatred. Now that we are trying to practice to calm ourselves and try to free ourselves from suffering, and we know that the causes of suffering come from our anger, our hatred, our delusion. So we start with the precepts, observing our sense, our sense organs, tending our mind, and then in the daily life, just be mindful when you eat, be mindful when you sleep. The next thing is our emotion, our hatred. So when we say we want to make sure that we become more and more peaceful, if you allow your anger to just flow as it is, then you find that after you get upset or you feel very angry, and you just so angry, I need to meditate. Do you think you can meditate immediately? You'll be just going to sleep. So it is very tough. And you find that it is very easy for us to get angry. And this, if we do not try to put a control onto it, it becomes easier and easier for us to get angry. And it becomes a stronger habit. And this is contradict to the peacefulness that we want. So that's why the Buddha says, a practitioner try to attain a peacefulness of mind. So it's just like the sky which is so calm and peaceful. You look at the sky which is so calm and peaceful, but suddenly there's a thunderstorm and lightning. It just disturbs the peacefulness altogether. So the Buddha say we need to understand that this hatred, anger, is a very strong obstacle to our practice. Because when we lost our anger and hatred, you find that a lot of time we will lose our rationality, and then we will start to commit wrongly, and we will swear others, and we will create unwholesome relationship with others, and also it strengthens the afflictions within ourselves. So that's something that we need to remember. Try to overcome our hatred and do not allow our hatred to disturb us. Right, the next one is arrogance. So you can see that these are all something that we need to reflect in our daily life. Arrogance. Now, we all want to practice. We all should, especially for monks and nuns, we all have devoted ourselves in the practice. Now, if we feel arrogant, that is not right. Because we are still imperfect, and yet we still rely on other people's support to live, and we should try to be modest and humble. And how can we be arrogant? So in fact, arrogance is a very strong obstacle to your hatred. Arrogance, very strong obstacle towards stress. Someone who has a lot of strong hatred, you find that whenever they want to practice, because their mind is always full of anger, it is very difficult for them to settle. People who are arrogant, they are not modest enough to accept teaching. So when they are arrogant, they thought they are good. So when someone gives them some advice, they do not like to accept it. So you lost a lot of opportunity in listening to good teaching. And when you are not modest, it is very difficult for you to let go yourself and really put yourself down. Because when we practice, we need to slowly reduce our self-centeredness. And if your arrogance is so strong, you always want to put yourself down, that becomes a very big block that's blocking you. So arrogance is something that we need to overcome. So remember, we are all imperfect. We rely on a lot of people's support in order to practice. What are we? We are not the greatest person in the world. What are we? Why are we feeling so arrogant about? We thought we are smart. We thought we are great. But without our parents, our teachers, that have taken care of us until that we have grown up today, how can you be such a great person? Without people's support, you can't be a great person as well. So we need to be modest and understand that we are still imperfect. We still have a lot of affliction in ourselves. If we want to attain real peace and ease, we need to understand that to be modest and to be humble, that I'm not good, I'm still imperfect, I need to work harder. So when someone says, oh yes, you're so proud, oh sorry, I think yes, my arrogance has grown. We need to learn to reduce that. Then the more modest you are, in fact, the more at ease you will be. Because when you are arrogant, you become very self-protective. You become very sensitive about people's criticism. But if you are a bit more modest, you know that you are imperfect. So you are all ready to accept people's criticism or comments. You don't get hurt so easily. Someone who is very arrogant, you find that they get hurt very easily because they do not want anyone to touch them. So that is something that Buddha reminded us, that we need to reflect ourselves in our daily life as well, reduce our arrogance. So reduce our hatred, reduce our greediness, right? Reduce our hatred, reduce our arrogance. And the next thing is avoid flattery. What do you mean by how do you explain flattery? Not useful word? Not necessary. Sometimes it's just that you try to praise someone to achieve your to gain some benefit for yourself. So you have certain motives behind. Some people just like to praise someone in a unrealistic way, so that that person feels so happy and can give him some benefit. Alright? So it means your mind is not very straight. Your mind is a bit crooked with motive and self-benefit intention. So you try to speak in a way that so that the benefit can come to you. This is not good. Because as a practitioner, it is very important for us to be honest and down to earth, have a mind which is straight. If our mind is only thinking of how can I get benefit from me, I need to praise this person, I need to buy some present for this person so that this person likes me, these are actually the motives. So a practitioner should have a mind which is very honest, straight, right? But when we say a straight mind, it doesn't mean that, okay, I think you have done something wrong, I'm very straight, so I'm going to criticize you immediately. We need to have a bit of compassion as well. Alright? So when we say a straight mind, it doesn't mean that okay, I'm a very straight person, that's why I always I'll always say something very straight and hurt everyone. That is not right. Okay? So a straight mind means that we don't harbor in ourselves a lot of self benefit motive. Whatever we do with sincerity. Okay? So that is something very important as well. Right, so that is something that try to make sure that we are mind honest. So all these parts, the first this section are more on discipline in our daily life. And you can see that if we start to uphold precepts, be able to be mindful of our mind and body, our sense organs and our mind, and then be moderate in our food, be moderate in our sleep, and then be mindful of our anger, was it right? Anger, and then hatred, and then arrogance, and then no flattery. So this is basically to make sure that we uphold the precepts and reflect ourselves so that we free ourselves from greed, hatred, arrogance, flattery, and have a good discipline of life. Okay, so this set a foundation for us to go into further practice. very important. So once you are able to have a mind which is honest, and you are moderate in your food, your sleep, everything is under your control, you are not carried away by desire too much, your anger is a bit less, you are more peaceful. Okay, now you can go on to the next stage. So this next stage is more towards the practice. So that's the first thing, is to have less desire. Understand that when the more we desire, the more suffering, the more stress that we're going to bring onto ourselves. And so we should try to learn to be contented and to have less desire. So that is the next one. And so after having less desire, the next part will be contented. To be contented with whatever we have. If you have a lot, okay, feel happy about it. But at a certain time when you have little, doesn't matter, be contented about it. When you're contented, you feel that you're always rich. If you're not contented, you always feel that I don't have enough. You have that feeling? A lot of rich people, they already have 9 properties. They still try to make it to 10. So they say, I still have to pay a lot of installment. I need to buy another one to make it 10. So that's why I don't have money to lend to you. Because they need to buy another house. Because they're not contented, so you find that you always feel that you're not satisfied, and you find that you always feel that you don't have enough. But someone is contented, you feel that it's fine anyway. Okay, there's no bed, I'll lie on the floor and I can sleep well, it sleeps soundly, and they still feel happy. If someone is not contented, they start to grumble, they go to their friend's house, the friends don't have an extra bed for him or her, then you feel unhappy, but then you can't go home, so you have to lie on the floor, and the whole night you can't sleep, because there's no bed for you, because you do not want to accept that today there's no bed for you, you have to sleep on the floor. But if you are contented, you say, okay, that's alright, I'm just coming to my friend's house, there's no bed, it's alright, I'll just sleep on the floor, you'll still be happy and have a good night, right? So if we are not contented, we will always feel that we are poor. But if we are contented, then you'll feel that you are rich. People who are not contented will always look for more things. At the end, you'll find that you'll become the slave of your desire. So be contented. So someone with all the upholding precepts and all the whatever we have said, up to this stage, a person will probably be easier to become contented. Once you're contented, and the Buddha said, next step is sometimes we need to practice in seclusion. Now, this is not necessary for the lay people, but lay people can probably practice in seclusion when the conditions is right. But for monks, okay, the Buddha encouraged that it would be good occasionally that we need to practice together with others, help others, but at certain time we need to develop ourselves further, then we may want to go to seclusion for a while, right? So it's just like all of you, sometimes the exams come, you turn off your mobile phone, turn off your email, and you don't want to touch anything, you want to go to seclusion and study for your exam for a week. And that's the same thing. So after we are contented, then you can sometimes go a bit deeper into your practice, where you try to cut down all chores for a while and just concentrate on your practice. Alright. So now, there are people who want to practice in seclusion, before they got their all these prerequisite ready, they say, oh, I'm tired, I think I want to go into seclusion. They go into seclusion, but their mind is not peaceful. At the end, they lock themselves up in a room and say, I'm going to stay in the room for 1 week, no one should disturb me. At the end, it's they themselves in the room who feel so bored that they can't stand themselves. Have you heard of incident as such? There are practitioners as such who finally go crazy. That they themselves say, I'm going to lock myself in a room into seclusion, and I'm going to stay there for a year. Before half a year, they go crazy. Because their mind is not settled. And that's why in order to practice seclusion, we need to have all these prerequisites, that our mind is finally contented, we are all ready to we desire are not disturbing us, then you go into seclusion, then you find that you are able to practice well. If you get tired of the noise, the busy life outside and just want to escape from that without taming your own mind, it's not going to work. So to practice in seclusion, that's the next thing. And the Buddha said, after we are able to practice in seclusion for a while, and the next thing is that we need to be diligent. So if we can be diligent in our practice, then you find that you can overcome a lot of problems. So if you are diligent, constantly working hard, bear in mind the teachings, upholding the precepts properly, and practice contentment and put in more practice. So you find that diligence is in fact applied to all sections of the practice. So if you can be diligent, it's just like constantly you put in effort. So it's just like the drip of water that drips on a piece of stone. Even if it's small drops, but it's continuous, you find that at the end you can make a hole. So the Buddha said we need to continuously practice, because if you only practice for 3 days and then you stop, so it's just like people when try to practice meditation, or people who try to learn the Buddha's teaching, and then they try to read to work very hard for 3 days, and then after that they say, oh, this is too tiring, give up. Then you're not going to get yourself anywhere. So you need to have continuous practice. And if we have continuous practice, bear in mind the Buddha's teaching, and always have this diligence in wanting to know, to learn more about the teachings, and to develop ourselves further, then you find that you become more and more mindful. So that's the second, the next part, which is mindfulness. So you find that you become mindful of the Buddha's teaching. So the Buddha says, we sometimes want to seek wise advisors, wise teachers for advice, but if we are able to become mindful of the teachings, that is better than you always go and seek for advice. Of course, seeking for advice is good, to get support from others is good, but if we can develop this mindfulness in ourselves, that the Dharma is within ourselves, you become a supporter for yourself, you protected yourself. That when you become mindful of the teachings always with you, you find that all these thieves of desire will not be able to get into you. They can't take away your virtue. You are strong now in yourself, not like the early stage where they come in and take you away. Now they come, you block the door and don't let them come in. So so if we can be mindful, you find that you, even if you go to a place where there's a lot of distraction, your mind just stay. Then at this stage you find that if you want to practice meditation, you'll be much, much easier. So the next one will be meditation. And you get into meditation, you find that because you're contented, you're not carried away by desire so easily anymore. As we say, in the early stage we need to watch our sense organs. So because you have been training yourself all the time, so now even when your sense organs have any contact with external objects, you're mindful, but you don't get carried away. So now you set a very good foundation for yourself to practice meditation. So at this time you'll be able to sit down quietly. When noise comes, you'll be able to let go. Any smell that comes, you'll be able to let go as well. You'll find that your mind is actually stronger than the external distraction. When you practice meditation, a lot of times we find that when we sit down, in the beginning, you have a battle within yourself. You find that your mind tends to go out very easily. It doesn't look like your ability to pull it back is strong enough. But if you continue to practice again and again, and try to pull it back again and again, slowly you may find that the ability for you to pull it back will become stronger, the distraction will become less, and even if you will probably slowly come to a stage where you can hear the noise, but then you just notice it and you let it go, you don't get carried away, your mind becomes stronger. And at this time you will be able to focus on your object concentration much clearer. And then slowly you will start to feel that you are more relaxed. Because initially you have a battle within yourself, so you are pretty tense, that I don't want to let, you don't want your mind to go away. But now, because your mind has become stronger, you got no worry that it will go away. And that's where you start to, if you come to this stage, you find that if you're sitting, you find that your shoulder will probably drop, and you find that the whole body will ease off. You find that there will be a sense of ease in your body, because you do not need to fight with yourself anymore. You feel that you have win. You have win the battle. And then you find that you'll just be able to observe your breathing in and out very peacefully and clearly. Although you still hear the noise sometimes, but you don't get carried away at all. And even thoughts that come to you, you find that they just disappear by itself. Anyone of you have that experience? Some of you? So when it comes to this stage, you find that your joy of meditation will arise. You feel like you want to continue to sit now. It's very relaxing. Okay? So, and in order to get into this stage, all these prerequisites will actually be very helpful. If you find you train yourself in your daily life as such, then you find that when it comes to meditation, you do not need to have such a strong battle within yourself. The reason why we all have all these problems is that we have not been trained doing the prerequisites properly. And in a sudden we want to sit down. It is very difficult. But if we have been training ourselves and have carried out the prerequisites properly, then train ourselves daily, then whenever you want to sit, you find it much easier for you to sit down. Alright, so once our mind is focused, we are able to concentrate, you find that distraction goes away, your mind becomes more and more focused, clear and clear. And this is the time that we can start to contemplate on the teaching, develop our wisdom. So that is concentration, and then the next thing is wisdom. That we can start to contemplate on the teachings of impermanence, the teaching of selflessness, and it is by developing wisdom that we are able to overcome our suffering, we are able to free ourselves from our ignorance, we are able to free ourselves from our affliction. So it is wisdom that can cut away all these afflictions and allow us to attain peace and ease. So when our mind is focused, then we can start to contemplate and develop our wisdom. And with this wisdom that develops, then you find that when we continue to deal with people, you are actually guided by wisdom rather than self-centeredness. So at that time you find that whatever you act will not be an action that is backed up by self-centeredness, that is not a speech that is backed up by delusion or ignorance, but rather you know exactly what you're saying, and that you are not carried away by the delusion, the confusion, delusion or the ignorance thought in the world anymore. So you are able to see things very clearly, very thoroughly. And so that is the next stage, which is free from idle arguments. So you find that sometimes people tend to argue who is right, who is wrong, and so on. But someone will attend realization, realize the wisdom, they won't fall into the trap of unnecessary argument as such. Okay. Alright, so that's basically up to the enlightenment state. And so the part that the Buddha tried to expound on how we can, from the starting, which is upholding the precepts, control of mind or body, moderate use of food, moderate in our sleep, and then refrain from anger and ill will, and then refrain from arrogance, and then refrain from flattery. Alright, so that's discipline. And next, to have less desire, be contented, practice seclusion, to be diligent, and then to develop right mindfulness, and then to practice concentration and develop wisdom, and then you go to the stage of no idle argument, which is not, that means you free yourself from self-centeredness. So that's how the Buddha, we find that in the last teaching, the Buddha explained very clearly the step of practice, the essence of practice. So this sutra is actually very, very important. It spells out very clearly how we should practice. It summarizes all the teachings that the Buddha has expounded. So if you can follow this sutra in your daily life, then you find that you can slowly develop yourself. is actually a part of practice that can be a liberation. Now, so the next part, which is the conclusion part, the Buddha knows that the Buddha tried to encourage the monks and say that every one of you should try to practice hard and not to be lax, try to be diligent. So whatever the Buddha says, you should all try to uphold and try to practice diligently in wherever you are. And in that way, you wouldn't feel regret. So if the Buddha say, I'm like a doctor, I tell you the problems, I know what are the illness, and I give you the prescription and the medicine. But whether you want to take the prescription and the medicine or not, it's up to you. If you do not want to take the medicine, you're not sure from your illness, you can't blame the doctor. Alright, so that's what the Buddha said. So the Buddha encouraged everyone to follow the teaching, and in that way everyone can cure from that illness of suffering and be able to attain enlightenment. And then the next part, in order to help everyone to clear their doubts and just to make sure that no one has any question, the Buddha then says that in the teachings I've expounded the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the causes of suffering, end of suffering, the path leading to end of suffering. Is there anyone having doubts in this? Because that is a very important teaching. So the Buddha asked, is there anyone having questions? And the Buddha said, is there anyone having questions? And then the Buddha asked again three times. So no one answered. No one asked any questions. So at that time there was a disciple called Aniruddha. He was able to read everyone's mind. Then he said, everyone has understood the Buddha's teaching. He says that the Four Noble Truths is the truth. There's no other truth than the Four Noble Truths, right? So, everyone has understand that the cause of suffering come from our greed, hatred, jealousy, ignorance. And that these are the causes of suffering. If we eliminate the causes of suffering, we can attain the end of suffering. And so everyone has understood it. There's no doubts about it. So there's no question. Then the next thing is that at that time during the congregation where the Buddha is lying there, is about to pass away, there were some people who were very very sad, and there are people who have already. Who just heard the last teaching of the Buddha and attained enlightenment. They are also a great disciple who already attained enlightenment, will just contemplate and do not have that kind of emotional feeling, sorrow. And so the Buddha just want to comfort everyone, and so he tell everyone that do not feel sad, because there are still some people who are feeling very sad. He said, do not feel sad. He said, even if I continue to stay in this world for another kapha or eons of life, sooner or later I will still have to leave, because there's no gathering that's never part. And so therefore, because this physical body is a worldly phenomena, it has to subject to impermanence. And so whatever I can do to benefit all sentient beings, I have carried out, and so all of you should try to practice hard to benefit yourself and as well as benefit others. Then in that way, the Dharma will always be around. But if I continue to stay longer and no one is practicing, then it is still of no use. So he says that whatever whoever who have affinity with me, I have guided them. And also for people who are going to come, sentient beings in the future, I've also created the conditions for them to learn. So the Buddha was very compassionate. After he attained enlightenment, he formed the Sangha order. So the monks and nuns. And the monks and nuns are given the responsibility of propagating the teaching, prolonging the teaching. And that's why we are now 2,500 years after the Buddha's Parinirvana, we are still able to listen to the teaching. That is the wisdom and the compassion of the Buddha. Because without his wisdom and compassion, he didn't see how he can make sure that the teaching is prolonged. Then you find that probably after three generations, the teaching probably will disappear. but because he understands, he wants the teaching to continue, so he established, he formed the Sangha order and passed on the responsibility of propagating the teaching to the Sangha order. And this is how generation after generation teaching is being prolonged up to 2,500 years later. It is very amazing. And that we have so much scriptures around. So we need to pressure all these teachings that we have. So the Buddha comfort everyone, there's nothing to worry. I have said whatever that can help you, I have said all the teachings that can help all of you, and the teachings will be passed on. So he says that from now on, all my disciples, all monks and nuns, should try to prolong the teachings, propagate the teachings, practice the teachings. Then in that way, the Buddha Dharma body, the essence of the Buddha, the truth, will always be around and never cease. So everyone should know that this world is impermanent, and so we all should try to be diligent in practice and seek for liberation. So there's nothing that is permanent, unchanged. So everyone has to remember, your body is also impermanent. He said, now that I'm going to enter Parinirvana, it's just like this, because this body is already deteriorating. It's just like something which is rotten. So that I have attained enlightenment, I have freed myself from suffering, and also I'm going to free myself from this physical body, which is something that you need to feel happy about. I get rid of the unwholesomeness. So so everyone should, all wise people should try to free yourself from all this suffering and attain enlightenment. So when we are able to free ourselves from afflictions and end suffering, then we should all feel happy for them. Okay, so that's nothing to feel sorrow about. So that's how the Buddha tried to comfort the disciple. And so finally, at the end, he says that again, he said, tell everyone to practice diligently. Remind everyone that this world is impermanent. And then finally he said, okay, it's about time, and everyone just concentrate in quiet, and I'm going to enter Parinirvana. So that's the end of the sutra. So you can see that the sutra allow us to imagine that kind of scene that the Buddha is telling the disciples, even in the last minute before he passed away, try to expound such a long teaching with great compassion, sincerity, and try to put into a lot of consideration in how to guide sentient beings, not only who are in front of him, but also sentient beings in the future, so that they can practice, and to also make sure that they don't feel sad. And so you can see the compassion of the Buddha. And so from this sutra, you can also see that the Buddha was just a living being in the world. And when he relate to the monks and the nuns or the disciples, it's just like daily life. So if you read some of the sutra, you find that it's not something very, the Buddha is not someone just sitting down there and then it's like non-human kind of speaking. But it is very casual, very daily related. So you find that it is just like the practice is just in the daily life. So so if you have the chance, you can read up the sutra, not only this sutra but some other sutra, like in the Agama Sutra, you find that it's just dialogue the Buddha the Buddha speaks to the monks and the nuns, that how he show his compassion, his care and concern in guiding and helping sentient beings. Okay, so that's the sutra of the Buddha's last teaching. So I hope that this sutra gives people and everyone of you an insight on how the Buddha expounded the teachings, and that the last teaching of the Buddha is a very important teaching for us to remember how to practice. So also bear in mind the compassion of the Buddha, that even towards the last minute of his life, he tried to remind us of the important teaching. So that we are all here sitting here today. We should make our vow to practice diligence.